how Reddit's done. There was a AI data center company went public and went up 72% on its first day on the market as well.
Which is that this is a meme stock or just a hot stock to invest, possibly based on the fact that everybody knows Trump and knows who he is. So in the wake of its Chapter 11, which is just fancy speak for its bankruptcy, it left wreckage across New York City specifically. You know, how it could have scored such a high valuation. And what really is, it's a sign of, it's less that Wall Street are buoyed by Trump's social media platform than they are bullish on his chances of returning to the White House.
Hi there, and welcome to Stock Club. I'm Mike, and joining me in today's episode is My Wall Street's chief investor, Emmett Savage. If you like what you hear and want to get more from us, head on over to mywallstreet.com and sign up to our mailing list today to stay in touch. You'll receive a free stock pitch on one of our favorite wide moat businesses. All you need to do is go to mywallstreet.com right now and sign up today. For more information, click on the link in the show notes for this episode. Today's podcast is brought to you by Vodafone Business. Now, if you're like us here on My Wall Street, you'll know that running a business is difficult. There are countless things to think about, and many often simply get ignored or completely forgotten about. That's where Vodafone Business can help. They've crafted a suite of tools and supports to boost your business's operations, and the best part is it's free for everyone. From cybersecurity to harnessing the power of AI, building a website, and improving how your teams work remotely, Vodafone Business will help you address the often overlooked but crucial elements for your business's success. To get started today, check out their one-to-one VHub digital support and advice service. You'll find everything you need right there. Find the link in our show notes or simply Google Vodafone VHub for more details. Now, let's get into today's episode. Emmett, how are we getting on?
How are you, Mike? How are things?
All good, all good. We have a great start to the show. It's like bringing back an old friend, because I know he was an all-star on this podcast for a long time, and that is the infamous Adam Neumann, former WeWork CEO. He was an all-star of this podcast, I think it's fair to say.
We love a chat about Adam Neumann. I mean, these characters, like these larger-than-life entrepreneurial characters that emerge from Silicon Valley, well, actually usually emerge from somewhere around the world and end up in Silicon Valley a la Elon Musk. They're an unavoidable topic on our podcast. Anyway, what about him?
Yeah, well, it's true. I think there's definitely a connection there, isn't it? From being this kind of megalomaniac to becoming a CEO. But Adam Neumann, famous for taking WeWork to, I think it was $54 billion valuation before it went for IPO. Was that right?
Something like that, yeah.
It turned out to be a complete house of cards. He used to walk the streets in New York barefoot, threatened to, and I quote, elevate the world's consciousness. He has put in a bid to buy back the company he bankrupt for 600 million quid. Do you remember when they finally got rid of him? His golden parachute was worth a couple of billion, I think. So it's fairly ironic. He's turning around and buying the scraps of the company he bankrupted with the money they gave him to piss off.
I know. Exactly. Yeah. There's your cash. Get out and don't. We never want to see you around here again until you buy it.
So my question is, does the world deserve more Adam Neumann? Is this a punishment for what Wall Street is getting into it right now?
Yeah, when you say his name, I think about over episodes you've occasionally called a thought leader a flute. And never before has that Irish expression been more apt. WeWork, as you said, filed for bankruptcy last year. It had at the time $19 billion of liabilities and $15 billion of assets. And while 15 is close to 19, it's not really, when you count from 15 billion to 19 billion, even in $100 bills, there was a vast chasm of deficit there. So in the wake of its Chapter 11, which is just fancy speak for its bankruptcy, it left wreckage across New York City specifically, because it had abandoned landlords, empty offices, and you know, these landlords had a hard time paying the money that they owed for the buildings that they'd bought and sublet to WeWork. So, and nonetheless, WeWork then filed to keep at least 7 of its leases across the US and Canada, including something like a 90,000 square foot lease in LA Century City. And then it basically rejected 80 of its leases around the world, which includes buildings like the gas company tower in downtown LA. So anyway, Neumann, as you say, or Neumann, rocks up to the mic. He's been struggling to regain control since he was ousted by the board in 2019. His lawyer sent a letter to WeWork's advisors last month saying he was looking to hook up is it Dan Loeb? Is that his name? Third Point Capital?
That sounds right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, to basically explore a bid for the company. And the wonders of the markets will never cease, Mike. As long, you know, as the market is going, we have subjects for our podcast. It's actually a great area to be podcasting on because the stories just come thick and fast.
100%. This fella should have been in prison and now he's going to be able to buy back the companies for pennies on the dollar. Like.
Did you watch the Netflix? I never got to watch the Netflix show about him. Did you get to see it?
No. This corporate kind of malfeasance documentary / random movies kind of all came thick and fast and I got sick of them really quick. Like, because I loved the Theranos story, Bad Blood by John Carreyrou, but by the time the TV show came out, it was like the fourth in line and I couldn't be bothered.
Well, I'm still going to probably give it a crack. And I want to watch the one about BlackBerry first, which I heard is an absolute banger.
Am I right? It's your man from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Oh, is it? What's Day? Something Day, is it?
No, Charlie Day is the other one. Edgerton or something. That's supposed to be good, actually. But I think that's a bit more more batshit than... Well, I suppose they're all batshit in their own ways. But yeah. Okay, so I just thought it'd be good to just double back. So we did our pod on Boeing 2 weeks ago, was it?
Was it last week? Oh, I don't know. It's all a blur. I thought it was last week.
So just going back in, because obviously because of our pod and our tell-all expose on the company, Boeing did the one thing they kind of had to do, at least from a public-facing perspective, and that was give the CEO the sack. So David Calhoun is, I think he's got to the end of the year. He's the fellow who gave us the line, a quality escape, when describing an emergency exit door flying off a brand new plane midair. Should have got sacked for that alone, I think.
Love it.
Not only him, but the chairman, Larry Kellman, and commercial airplane CEO Stan Deal are also either stepping down or retiring. Also, I think for any corporate exec, the name Stan Deal is probably the best name I've ever heard.
Oh, it's awesome. I absolutely love that. But you're right. I mean, this is the power of podcasting. We turn the world's attention to the fact that it's not good when a plane falls out of the sky. And as you say, a week later, Dave Calhoun, he announced he'll step down in 2024, and chairman of the board, Larry Kellner, he's not going to stand for re-election this year. And then, as you say, Stan Deal, the CEO of the commercial airplane unit, is out effectively immediately. But do you know what I thought of immediately when I read the news? I wondered how many times somebody has mentioned Steely Dan to Stan Deal. Drop us a line, folks, if your name rhymes with a band. Howie and Mike and Emmett, my name is Zed Leplin, and my sister's name is Fink Floyd. Anyway, so out you go, Steve Calhoun. Don't let the loose wing hitch on the way out. Take Steely Dan with you and their backing singers and get your bag and baggage and get out of the class. If you want a CEO job, I think this is a great one right now because it's all upside from here. Oh, I think it's an absolutely... I do, honestly, Mike, you want to go into a business when Rome is on fire. Seriously, the only way is up, no pun intended. That's the type of CEO-ship you want because really all you have to do is heal the culture, make it a safe space, make safety the most important thing, make all KPIs about safety, keep talking to the street, have hug-ins with your staff, encourage open and honest conversations. You know, we all have these, like bring in a couple of counselors, everyone is allowed to just have a safe space. But number one, build safe planes that the door doesn't fly off, the wing isn't loose, the software that... whatever pilots are told about the special software that pushes the nose down, like just make it an open and honest business. I would take that CEO ship in a heartbeat.
I saw someone said he was the best CEO Airbus ever had.
That is excellent. Yeah, that is true. He is the best. Apparently he was a good CEO.
Yeah. He's got a serious resume, a bunch of top American executive positions. So I think the problem was more so that he was coming from a lot of financial backgrounds rather than engineering, which is necessary. So I imagine anyone that's going to come in, as you said, their culture is top of the list, but they come in and make safe planes. And, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a amount of payoffs. I think the FBI approached the people that were on the Alaskan Airlines plane saying there could be like criminal intent behind it. So it's obviously not going to be plain sailing, but you know, if you're the new guy and you came in, well, none of that was my fault. All I'm doing is trying to fix what they did wrong. Yeah. So I have a question. Boeing, we kind of established too big to fail. I think it's about 60% off its all-time highs, maybe a bit less. Would you consider buying? Or
I get that concept and that strategy, if you like, and it's true, they'll recover. I mean, if you're going to bet, you're going to bet they'll recover. It reminds me years and years and years ago, Shell, I think it was, had a giant oil spill. It was probably about, I'd say between 15 and 20 years ago. And maybe it was BP. I can't quite recall who, but because at the time I remember tweeting that the shares today were a steal. And like the shares in the entity had just fallen over a cliff edge. It was a really environmentally disastrous oil spill. And sure enough, Shell or BP recovered. I remember they recovered very, very healthily, and there was 100% upside in the shares at the time. But I did not invest then for the same reason that I wouldn't invest now, which is it kind of skews with my belief set is probably too big a thing to say, but I don't like trying to profiteer from something that has a negative backdrop. I invest purely on the basis of optimism, on a better future, on a company that's changed the world, that there's a set of companies I just wouldn't invest in. And I'm not saying that one of the aircraft manufacturers I have a moral issue with either of them. I certainly don't, but I just wouldn't invest because it just doesn't resonate with me. And but I can equally say, yeah, if the only thing that matters is making money, it's probably going to recover. And if you just put a few bucks in and leave it there for 10 years, the world has a short memory. Would you invest?
I think there's nothing wrong with what you said. Yeah. I just think there's so many opportunities out there. You can probably find better ones than getting like, you know, a 60% dig on Boeing's over 6 or 7 hard years of a very serious turnaround. So I wouldn't be jumping in. And if I did, I probably wouldn't be telling people on a podcast. But people are looking at this through investors' eyes, obviously. Airbus is up 15% in the last month, I think. 40% in the last year.
Were you telling me on or off, Mike, or was somebody else that one of the big flight booking services like Kayak allows you to exclude a Boeing plane when you're booking a flight? So there you go. I mean, that's amazing. I wonder how many times people hit that button, but if it was there in front of me, I would certainly toggle it on. Why would you? Like, why would you accept that risk?
The only thing is, it doing more research and we'll move on because we are talking about Boeing as for 10 minutes after we talked about it for an hour last week. But for an airline can't just decide Ryanair was all Boeing planes. It can't decide tomorrow it's going to buy a few Airbuses because the pilots have to be trained completely. They have to have the spare parts. So it is really locked in. If you use one manufacturer, you kind of just use one. The cost involved in managing two isn't really feasible. So that feeds more into Boeing being a bit of an opportunity. But yeah. Okay, so we're moving on then. This is an interesting story. I think we've got a new meme stock on our hands. So Trump Media and Technology, the parent company of Donald Trump's social media platform, Truth Social, has finally gone public via SPAC merger with Digital World Acquisition Corp, which I think the Digital World Acquisition Corp has been public for years and years. So there's a big limbo between, this was supposed to happen in 2021, maybe. Was it that far back? So yeah, with about $3.5 million in sales in the first three quarters of 2023 and a valuation approaching 10 billion quid, this is really falling into the severe meme status already. Emmett, you were looking into this one. What the hell's going on here?
Well, it was. And even though the whole world is getting the Trump versus Biden story, and specifically the Trump story in full fury, you actually have to tune out to avoid it. It's just the unavoidable story. I still think it's worth giving it 30 seconds so everybody's on the same page. Truth Social launched in February 2022, which was a year after Trump was banned from all the social media platforms like Facebook and X and all the other ones, maybe Snapchat. I don't know if he had a Snapchat. And that was all because of the January 6th insurrection in the US Capitol, of course. And he's since been reinstated to the two big ones, Facebook and X, but he's gone. Like, he's like, good luck to you. Thanks for reinstating me. I doubt he even said that. So on Monday of last week, he appeared in court in New York at a hearing for a case involving hush money. And afterwards, he said when he was just leaving that, he told the reporters that Truth Social is doing very well. It's hot as a pistol and doing great, which you'd expect the founding leader, I suppose, not CEO, but the founder of a business, say just prior to going live on the stock market, such as his prerogative. And I can tell you, Chamath Palihapitiya said a hell of a lot more about SPACs he was bringing to the market. So Trump, you know, praised the business that his name is hanging over the door on. It's yet to disclose its user numbers. I think that's the latest. I haven't seen any user numbers. Have you, Mike?
I think there's one user and his name is Donald Trump.
Well, no. So according to SimilarWeb, which estimates this kind of stuff and I had a look at before the podcast, it has about 5 million active users on mobile and web as of February. I don't know how they estimated that, but that is not a big number. And when you look at the website, as I did before the podcast, the banner is Truth Social is America's big tent social media platform that encourages an open, free, and honest global conversation without discriminating on the basis of political ideology. So basically, the now 77-year-old former US president owns 58% of the shares in this merged company, which is now listed on the NASDAQ under the ticker, I think it's DJT, Donald J. Trump, is it? Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, his name is his brand. So it is a huge, you know, and I suppose you could say instant creation of value for him. And we've spoken about SPACs, you know, many, many times in the past. On the podcast, and I take in a deep breath because I cursed the day they became a hot trend, which was kind of late 1999, early 2020. The number of SPACs that were merging was just like some kind of, what do they call, fake fool's gold rush, I guess.
You had a bit of a Freudian slip there. You went 1999 instead of 2019.
Jeepers, you're right, pure Freudian.
Straight into the dot-com bubble.
You're absolutely right. There, almost 20 years to the month later, the dot-com bubble was, the reflections of history were there with the SPAC bubble. You're absolutely on the money, and of the parallels on that particular analogy are just so strong. It's unbelievable, and it's worth us talking about another day in the podcast. But anyway, Trump is subject to a lockup agreement, which prevents him from selling his shares for 6 months, which is very typical when a business goes live on the stock market. You don't want the early investors and founders and the likes just basically dumping their shares at the cost of those who have decided to buy at the retail level. But he might be able to use his stake in the business to borrow cash to pay his bill. There was his bill is something like, is it $500 million?
It was 450, but they brought it down to 175.
I mean, it's preposterous levels of money, but there was a very interesting piece in Time magazine online, which said that the company's trajectory has led many to wonder if it could be, you know, how it could have scored such a high valuation. And what really is, it's a sign of, it's less that Wall Street are buoyed by Trump's social media platform than they are bullish on his chances of returning to the White House. That's what we're looking at.
I think that's giving it too much credit. I think this is pure meme status, and this is going to be absolute it's just something to speculate on.
Well, it's a big brand.
I don't know. Yeah, it is a brand, but you know, I think Trump brought his casinos company onto the market 20 years ago, maybe a bit further back, when he kind of took over all Atlantic City, and that went completely tits up. That actually had the ticker symbol DJT as well. Yeah. But I just think the stars have aligned for him in the sense that we're in an incredibly speculative spot in the market where meme coins have come back, Bitcoin is up. We've seen AI companies like Super Microconductor went up 1,000% in the space of a year. And people are just taking bets on stuff. And I think there's a very reasonable chance that there's going to be a lot of hype and speculation around Trump in the next 6 months, obviously, and all the media attention. And that's all you need is just media attention. And I think it'll be traded around for a while, but it's a $10 billion company with $3.5 million in sales.
That is crackers.
Price to sales ratio of 3,000 or something.
Probably are. But when you think about, I was reading a piece of probably a couple of years ago, which said that there's A-listers in the world of celebrity, and then there's a bunch of names that sit above that, that are transcend A-lister, that their name is in its own right a giant, giant mega brand known to most human beings around the world, like Michael Jackson or Elvis Presley. And Trump was one of the names that was put that he's not A-lister, he is a brand. And when you take that, whether you like the man or not, and that's not what we're here to discuss, he's known. He's known by everyone. He's known by children. He's known by people in countries where he doesn't even know the country exists. So like he's got a mega brand. But when you look at the point you made, which is that this is a meme stock or just a hot stock to invest, possibly based on the fact that everybody knows Trump and knows who he is, you know, people back what they believe in and they own what they want to succeed. I remember reading something about the correlation between Democratic voters and the sales of Hillary Clinton's book. And then another tome, which at the time was a complimentary story about Donald Trump. And it was something like a 99% correlation between people buying, buy books to reinforce what they already believe. You back something that you want to, that aligns with your belief set. And I think that's what we're looking for. And I'd go so far as to say that almost without a shadow of a doubt, it's the most political listing of all time. Like, has there ever been a stock more hardwired to a political figure or a political storyboard? Like, pro-Joe Americans will avoid Trump, the Donald J. Trump stock, you know, like the plague, and pro-Trump voters will most probably like the product and its prospects and what it stands for. Whether or not they use it is another thing. In fact, Trump supporters believe in him with a fervor of cult members, and nothing seems to deter them. So as you alluded to, Mike, you know, Truth Social, you know, it's only had revenue of, what was it, $3 million in the first 9 months of last year? And lost 50 million bucks in the same period. That's wild. I mean, that's absolutely crackers. So I do think we're looking at the most political listing in the history of the stock market. I just cannot think of anything that's more, as I said, hardwired to a political storyboard and agenda.
Yeah, and at a time when political tensions are probably as high as, I won't say ever been, because I'm quite not ignorant, but, you know, there have all been times, I'm sure, but in recent history, at least anyways, where it's been so polarizing and conflicting in America when it comes to politics. This is almost, it's almost what you're saying of reaffirming someone's identity. And like, this is who I am and this is part of my personality. And of course I would support this because I support everything that Donald Trump does. And yeah, the fact that it's a public company that investors can lose significant amounts of money on is what makes me uncomfortable, because we've talked about why it doesn't really seem like a proper company, you know, in the sense of the disconnect between its market cap and revenue is just one example. But just that it's a political message and a political idea that has found itself on the stock market and is already incredibly speculative and will have a huge amount of attention. And then in 6 months' time, Donald Trump could turn around and, you know, get his quick payout and do whatever he wants and cost everyone else a lot of money doing so. So yeah, there's a lot of issues there. Like,
You're on the money. I mean, like, American politics has become very tribal. It's you're either this side or the other side, and families fall out and make pacts not to talk about it at Thanksgiving and that kind of stuff. But, you know, if you went to Fifth Avenue and stopped 100 people and said, what do you think of Fisker? You know, if I would, I'm going to hazard a guess that 10%, 10 of the 100 people would have heard of Fisker. And even if you prompted them, what do you think? This would be less? Really? Well, either way, so if you prompt them and say, look, it's an EV company, here's a picture of their car and here's a story, you get a few opinions. But if you stopped 100 people and said, what do you think of Truth Social? All 100 will have heard of it, and all 100 will have a strong opinion. So when you take that effect and multiply it across the entire world, and you bring in the fact that it is that politics in America appears to be as tribal as it's ever been, you're going to get half of the, let's just say, investing world rooting for its success, and the other half ignoring it. So the side of the line that has apathy just has no effect. Maybe they short it, but then you have the other half who are like, go Truth Social. And I think that strong driving force. But you're right, it is a house of cards. When you look at the valuation, the revenue, the users, it just doesn't add up as an investment.
I think it's a good testament to the attention economy that has become so prevalent now, especially with social media and influencers and the rest. This is like an extension of that into the financial world. And in fairness, like, crypto meme coins have been that for a while, where all a meme coin needs to do is get attention. It's like when the one I was talking about last week or 2 weeks ago, where the guy who set it up lost everyone's money, and when it launched, it went up because it made a bunch of headlines because the guy who set it up lost everyone's money. Do you know what I mean? This is that times a million. So, yeah. And before we move on, it's interesting you mentioned Fisker, because we're talking about the power of the pod, getting rid of Bowen CEO. Fisker just got delisted from the New York Stock Exchange.
Ah, they got delisted last night. I was looking, funny, I was looking, as I finish every night I flick through about 250 graphs real quick, and Fisker is on my list, and I figured out, I mean, I don't give it anything much time. I'm just kind of absorbing a five-year graph and then a one-week graph of about 250 businesses. And I flicked through them super fast, and I realized something. So I wondered, so it was delisted, it's gone, kaput. What have we just done to Truth Social? Let's tune in, folks. Like, honestly, this is really disruptive. I like what we're doing here. You may as well tell us, I mean, give us an update on Reddit, Mike, because, you know, at this moment now, the power of our word is heavy. What's the story with Reddit?
I think Reddit is the antithesis to that point. But before we get into it, I just want to give our listeners a quick reminder from Vodafone Business, sponsors of Stock Club. You can check out their free one-to-one digital support and advice service today to discuss a range of topics, from social media tips, cybersecurity, and building a website for your business. Search Vodafone VUB, or click on the link in the show notes, or as Emmett said, go into your local Vodafone shop. I wouldn't recommend that last one.
No, I think VHub is the biz, by the way. It is the biz, and we're customers in my Wall Street, coincidentally, nothing to do with the sponsorship, and I mean that. So it's the biz. I'll just go and we're not allowed to say go in and talk to them. Yeah, just go and look for VHub. There's links in the show notes.
So Reddit was our last kind of cleanup, I suppose. We're going back over all our stories we covered this month, I guess. We panned it pretty heavily with Reddit. None of us were fans.
We really called that one, didn't we?
So the IPO was 5 times oversubscribed. It sold all its shares at the top end of the range, which was around $34. And a few days as a public company, I think it raced up to around $66. Yeah, it's at 65 today. So basically doubled in the few days as a public company. And so, look, I think this is showing an appetite at the minute for new tech stocks. We've seen how well the NASDAQ has done over the past 18 months. Huge result for a company like Reddit, which we discussed the faults of. And I don't think it inspired a lot of confidence maybe in the roadshow. But my kind of question on this is, if you're a private tech company now and you're looking at how Reddit's done, there was a AI data center company went public and I think went up 72% on its first day on the market as well. So there's a huge appetite there. I would be considering IPO pretty quickly if I was kind of a hypey AI company, surely.
So yeah, what you said, I agree with. How about that for safety? Listen, come here. I'll tell you what, you're looking into a class action lawsuit, which I thought was, sent me a Slack about it last night. And I said, yeah, let's talk about this. That sounds like an interesting one. I won't spoil the surprise, but this is quite the clanger. Go for it.
Yeah. So this is if you look up first world problem in the dictionary, this might come up. I actually love this story. So it's, you know, the plight of the rich, the tiny violin symphony is out for these poor souls who can't go buy a new $10,000 handbag. So the lawsuit was brought against Hermès, who they own a bunch of brands, but they're probably most famous for the Birkin bag. If you've heard of that, it's,
yeah, he says, cause like, I know it, never heard of it, but go on anyway. Tell
basically
me
basically this ultra exclusive $10,000 handbag. I think on the resale market, they can go for as much as 20, 30. One.
How many cup holders does it have?
Yeah. One limited edition. One went for as much as $450,000. So yeah, they're a big deal for whatever reason, like same as like Rolexes aren't worth the amount of money that has went into putting them together. They're worth that much because they're a Rolex, et cetera, et cetera. So two people from California have filed a class action lawsuit against Hermès because they were unable to buy its Birkin bag. And this is a thing you see a lot in luxury companies where you just can't walk into a shop, even if you have the money. You can't plop down your credit card and say, give me one of those. I talked recently about the hoops you have to jump through to buy a Ferrari a few weeks back. Well, Hermès kind of has a similar process. So to be considered like as a potential customer, you've got to basically buy a bunch of other stuff from Hermès before they'll be like, oh yeah, we're okay with selling you this bag.
So there's a checklist of pre-purchase items before you can buy this Birkenstock or whatever you call it, Birkin bag.
Yeah, Birkenstocks you can buy tomorrow if you want. Yeah, so basically you go into a Hermes shop and they'll be like, oh, we recommend you buy a bunch of this other stuff, scarves, belts, perfume, whatever. And then maybe come back next month and be like, oh, maybe you're ready to buy a bag now. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's nuts, like, but this is...
They keep a little, obviously a record is kept. You're not reliant on the shop assistant to recall your face. There's probably a loyalty card you get punched or something and bring in the receipt.
Yeah, it's one of those, the little copy things they stamp. You come back, you bought 9 scarves, now you can buy a bag.
Nothing says luxury like one of those crumpled up little cardboard coffee tokens.
Exactly. But basically, and there's probably a case where what the plaintiffs are alleging is that this falls under a process called tying, which is essentially the condition that in order to buy X, you also have to buy Y and Z. So it has a lot of impact for a lot of luxury companies because this is fairly common. I mentioned Ferrari. Ferrari, to buy a new one, you at least have to have owned a secondhand one before. There's a bunch of other hoops. You have to be of a certain age. You can only buy parts directly from Ferrari. You have to have a good relationship with the dealer. There's a lot of different things. And they're not the only one because this art of like bundling products or making customers jump through hoops, it protects that exclusivity. Do you know what I mean? Which is the key tenet.
I mean, this is the whole fancy of luxury. Scarcity creates demand. And I remember Harley Davidson, they could have had 1,000 of them in the garage out the back. But if you went in to buy a Harley at the time, I don't know if it's the case anymore, you'd have to wait a year and a half. And that's just total typical behavior. Something says to me, Mike, that if in Ireland you walked into a Ferrari showroom, and there is none as far as I know, but whoever sells Ferraris in Ireland, I just can't believe if you didn't walk in with a checkbook, with a $400,000 check, you wouldn't walk out with your order placed and your check left behind.
No, this is the thing. I imagine going in and being like, I'm willing to spend $10,000 on a handbag. And they'd be like, no, sorry, sir.
Yeah, it is crazy.
It does. It sounds completely counterintuitive, but I think this is what luxury is based on, is creating this scarcity and exclusivity. Because if you think about it, I'm just thinking of like antitrust law in general. And it's all about the creation of monopolies and like basically forcing your product on people. And now this is doing the opposite. This is intentionally stopping you from spending money on a product. So it is a really interesting court case from that perspective, because while tying is illegal, it's traditionally been seen, you know, as necessities. So like if you're, I don't know, the example would be say like medicines or whatever, you have to buy this and this and this, or like in order to buy milk, you have to buy it with cereal, or, you know, like as in it's very much for necessities. And I don't think there's anything that could be considered less of a necessity than going in and spending five figures. So whether it happens or not, like the amount I know on antitrust could be put on the back of my hand. So I'm not sure how legitimate of a case it is, but there'll be a lot of interested parties watching. Rolex do something similar. I don't think you can buy the exclusive model. You're on a wait list for years, but to buy the exclusive models, you have to buy maybe the kind of lower end model first. Porsche, similar processes. Obviously, we talked about Ferrari as well.
I didn't know any of this. This is, shows how often I buy luxury goods, because this is a whole world that's unknown to me. It is so counterintuitive, but you can also see upholding brand values and strength. But I wonder if those folks over in California who decided to run with this class action lawsuit saw an opportunity to make a quick buck, or they felt hard done by and saw the opportunity to make a quick buck. But I wonder if there was a bunch of, you know, very, very disappointed Birkin bag purchasers saying this is so unjust, we need to bring this to the courts. It has to be just the equivalent of an ambulance chaser, just someone who just wants a quick buck, right?
Yeah, no, I think so too. Like, what's the damages going to be? First of all, they're saving your money because they're stopping you from spending money.
Yeah.
And maybe like they could get money back from the like ancillary products they bought. You know, the 20 scarves they have, they might get a refund, but I don't know. Are you going to give damages for a case like this? But I think it's a really interesting study on luxury products in general and why investors like them. Because, you know, the leather and the craftsmanship that goes into making a Birkin bag does not add up to 10 grand. Let's just say it adds up to a grand. Do you know what I mean? And that extra 9 grand is 100% margin, because that 9 grand you're paying for is the fact that your one down the road can't buy it and you're the only one in town with it. And that goes for all luxury products as well. So it's interesting. I think it's an interesting industry. This case got a bit of attention because it kind of threatens that in some way. But again, it is the tiny violin for these rich people who can't get exactly what they want.
You know, the way I think the business could support it is by saying, look, we've only one person who has the suitable level of craftsmanship to make this bag. So we only produce whatever, one a month or one a week or whatever the number is. And they could come up with this narrative of a scarce skill, but nobody really would buy it. But it's done everywhere. I remember years ago, your man Chip Wilson, the founder of Lululemon. Is it Chip Wilson was his name? I hope I'm getting. Yeah, Chip Wilson, the founder of Lululemon, and now I think ex-CEO, was kind of he wouldn't allow his product to be sold in a size 14 or larger. And his argument, the company's argument was it's logistics and inventory and you get more of a size 12 or lower into a box and easier for shipping. But the reality, Chip Wilson, I hope I'm getting his name right, said that I just don't want anyone who's a little bit on the heavier side seen in my gear. And that in its own right creates, I think, a retail equivalent of this exclusivity, which is, I don't know if you want to call it body shaming, but it's, to my mind, it's a variation of what we're discussing, which is you can buy it, but you can't, even though you're both walking into the shop with the same wallet, the same civil liberties as the next person. But we have decided who we're going to sell this to. And on the whole, it's just not on. If you're going to sell something, sell it. But again, that's it. You bring it into a luxury realm and all these other rules start to come into play, or else it would no longer be a luxury product. Case in point, Michael Kors. They started out as a hand bag maker, I think, or maybe shoes. Oh, there you go. I was even a shareholder. I don't know if they did shoes or handbags. I'm Morto. But anyway, Michael Kors was a luxury leather manufacturer, as was Coach. I was a shareholder in Coach as well. But what happened was they decided to go from luxury to mass market. They lost their strategic advantage and in turn lost what made them special. So I can see why Hermès and Friends do what they do, but it's the manner in which they do it that really needs a closer inspection. And I'm sure no better woman or man than a judge in California.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We're going to close out the show with a section you've called Sneak Peek.
Right. This is a new, we'll see what time it is. It's a new segment. I'm going to say 30 seconds or less, where I'm going to give a weekly sneak peek at something we're doing in one of our paid services. We're a commercial organization. It's important that we keep pumping what we do because we do something that's very special and nobody else is doing it as good as us. And if you successfully guess the business that I'm sneak peeking, good luck to you and well done. So I'm going to kick off with a stock that is going live in Horizon today. I'm pitching it, which simply put, is an efficient, profitable, growing, founder-led business with possibly the best financials I have ever seen. That's how good a stock it is. It's, I mean, like we joked in the past, unless you worked there, you wouldn't have heard of the place. It's got an order backlog of about $3 billion. It literally cannot process the demand as fast as it's arriving at its door, which is nuts if you see the size of the company. I'm almost certainly going to invest in this particular business, and it's going live in Horizon today. So sign up for Horizon, see full details. And Horizon, by the way, is a My Wall Street service run by me with an ambition to grow 10x in 12 years. It's my own real life portfolio. And I've never really been more excited to be an investor as I am now. And the stock I just mentioned is one of about four coming up that I think will be a massive winner. And I have a very big strategic plan with Horizon, but the overarching target is to 10x in 12 years. Okay, right, Mike, I'll get better at doing these sneak peeks, but I'll get better at teasing and I'll get better at sneaking them. So that was the first one. And the basic bottom line is, folks, sign up for Horizon and watch over my shoulder for the rest of my investing life.
That's great. All right. Before we finish up the show, just thank you to our friends at Vodafone Business. If you're a business owner in need of a leg up when it comes to your digital transformation, get yourself over to Vodafone VHub to book your appointment today. You can find the link in our show notes for more details. Emmett, thank you for joining me today. And thank you, everyone, for listening in. Remember, if you want to hear more from Horizon, or if you just want to hear more from us on My Wall Street, just head over to mywallstreet.com. And sign up today. You will get onto our mailing list. You will get a free stock pitch. That's all just in exchange for your email. So if you are interested in what we do at My Wall Street, that's the best place to start. And from there, that could be the start of your investing journey and kickstarting to become the next level. Thanks for joining us today, and we will talk to you next week.